Hello again. It's Michonne Neal, your resident gentleman goddess, and we're going to do yet another episode of Integrated Non-Monogamy. So, sit tight and, yes, let this earworm fill you. With the rise of interest in polyamory and other forms of non-monogamy, our communities have a unique platform from which to speak and to possibly even transform lives. But there's also a bit of a problem. In my experiences with most of the non-monogamous communities, I have encountered very little that strikes me as truly ethical, radical, or even humanizing. And I'm not alone in this. I've known many people and seen plenty of articles about people who are so fed up with the lack of genuine ethics within non-monogamy that they no longer identify with it. And I'm very tempted to be one of them. In fact, as you'll see, I have started to create new language around describing myself because as I often like to say, I was never so disgusted by the thought of being non-monogamous or polyamorous until I actually discovered the communities. And that's saying something. Because for communities that pride themselves on offering healthier solutions, regardless of relationship orientation, the practice of it seems to be more of a burden than a blessing when it comes to certain marginalized people. There are some deeply ingrained myths and assumptions about non-monogamy that actually end up excluding people with varied experiences, especially those of us who have intersecting marginalized identities, or as I also tend to call myself, are people who are a minority of minorities. I am an other gender, intersex, black person who practices what most often gets termed relationship anarchy. Yet, unlike many relationship anarchists, I actually care about decolonizing desire and addressing anti-blackness. I have been non-monogamous all of my life, even before I knew the terms for it. I am also indigenous, aromantic, noetosexual, left-handed, synesthetic, kinky, autistic, and panerotic. I have invisible mental and physical illnesses, am otherwise neurodiverse, a survivor of horrific things. I have been impoverished from the day I was born. And most often I am a single parent who cannot afford a fucking babysitter. So that means 24/7 for years with cheerings. Yeah, you try to stay sane. Ugh. I also have had two lovers pass away. One of whom had schizophrenia, and the other who had more physical illnesses. One was a cis woman, and the other was a cis male, and both were black, like me, meaning that the ways they experienced their genders, or lack thereof, was trapped within this anti-black swirl of degendering and misgendering that all black people have had to deal with since colonization. So when I critique and make these criticisms about the lack of ethics within ethical non-monogamy, I'm coming from over 30 years of personal experience and a study of the actual history of my own people. And also just having to exist at many of the most oppressed intersections. And having been at the center of assumptions and myths that nearly cost me my life, such as being given the wrong diagnosis and medical treatments by a medical establishment that has long tortured, mutilated, and benefited from the experimentation on black and brown bodies. I would like to help unpack those myths that make the non-monogamous community a rather unethical place to be. Now, the first myth that I want to talk about is the fact that people seem to believe that non-monogamy and polyamory in particular can only be a transition, or at least those are the stories that we get when we look into the non-monogamous communities. Those are the stories we hear most often, and that's where all the advice comes from. It addresses people that have to transition into non-monogamy. But see, I very strongly believe that what people now call polyamory is inherent to my nature. And while nature versus nurture should not be a fucking issue, my personal experience of non-monogamy is not the typical narrative, and which is why looking into it, the more I looked into it, the more confused I was and the more dismayed I was. I had never encountered these issues around jealousy or difficult first relationships or abusive partners or any of the other concerns of these people who chose to transition into polyamory or who experienced romantic attraction in the sense of the larger culture. The way that I love is different from the supposed, the quote-unquote consummate version, which is the triangular theory of love. And yet, there was not any non-romantic language to describe what it is that I felt. Stories that my middle passage kin and I would have turned to had been erased from our history and beaten out of us over the generations. Thus, I created some. Yet to this day, pretty much all of the community's stories still focus on romantic or white or cis straight people who have transitioned into non-monogamy. And even if they claim to be inherently non-monogamous, are still hugely problematic and still hugely privileged. So instead of feeling like I was part of the community, I ended up feeling more alienated than ever. Most people perceive me as female, and because I'm black as well, it seems to mean that I garner attention from those whose fetishes outweigh my actual humanity. And so when I stated in one of the largest non-monogamous groups, one of the largest open relationship groups on Facebook, I brought this up because several men within the poly-A community specifically had explicitly ignored my gender, my sexual preferences, and my desire for friendship by immediately just asking for sex or to explore some disgusting fetish with me. And in one case, I was actually raped by one of these men, who then claimed that it couldn't be rape because I was polyamorous. So I stated, I pretty much had to avoid cis straight men for my fucking health. I was told that my experiences were too political to be shared in the group. What the fuck, right? It exploded as others who had been fetishized, empathized, and the rest simply wanted to return to talking about how awesome it was to feel compersion for the first time. So, those other alienated folks and I split off into my new group, Intersectional Non-Monogamy. Because abuse and dehumanization and racism and all of the other isms aren't something that we can just shrug off and ignore. And it's not activism, it's just our fucking lives that are literally on the line here. So how do we fix this division? How do we capture more voices? The communities need to allow room and give the mic over to those of us whose non-monogamy has always been our orientation. And for people who can explore non-monogamies and polyamory from contexts that are not colonized and rooted in white supremacy, you know, we need to get back to our roots, to the ways it used to be, that they always seem to want to quote within evolutionary psychology to justify being non-monogamous, but never actually understand how we moved from that to where we are now. There is so much that we have to share from our unique viewpoints that can actually help to resolve many of the common newbie mistakes. Non-monogamy is often touted as having the power to change the world, but there is absolutely nothing transformative about perpetuating the abusive, oppressive status quo. Speaking of which, The second myth is about disastrous first relationships and how they're considered normal. But seriously, abuse is not normal, folks. At least it shouldn't be. I mean, let's talk about it. Let's break it down. So, speaking of newbie mistakes, how many of you have just heard all the freaking stories about terrible first relationships? And would you be surprised to know that I've never actually had these supposedly common relationship issues that people think are inherent to being polyamorous? My experiences and my transitions have always been without drama and were always based and rooted in who we actually are and not on these taken-for-granted defaults of society. Many popular poly-A stories and guides, like More Than Two and the Game Changer, the Husband Swap, and just, you know, Ethical Slut and all that other shit, They reference at least one non-monogamous experience that either ended in total disaster or was extremely unhealthy and even downright abusive. This is usually regarded as a normal problem arising from transitioning into non-monogamy rather than the influence of monogamous and romantic culture on our practices, as well as arising from the very fact of transitioning. So even Franklin Vo, who claims to have always been non-monogamous, felt so guilty about his own needs and desires that he allowed many of his relationships to end prematurely due to insecurities, the abusive veto power, and bullshit couple privilege. He remained with his wife for far too long in an attempt to cater to her desires, and it wasn't until decades later that any of his relationships were able to be built on a healthy foundation. He actually... This is the part where I, you know, get a little, okay. Because, see, he wrote about this and he literally profited from and benefited from the uncompensated emotional labor and pain of all of these women that he claimed to love without even acknowledging or realizing the abusive and oppressive dynamics that ruined so many lives. Now, see, this is the thing about ethics, is that it starts at the root, and that is where we should begin, always. These problems need to be addressed before deciding to be non-monogamous, instead of afterwards. In my case, and in the case of many others like me, being aromantic tend to help with issues like jealousy, autonomy, and not accidentally creating bullshit hierarchies. My relationship transitions have always been smooth and based on inherent incompatibility rather than based on unhealthy power dynamics. Compersion is a natural state instead of something that has to be learned. We feel no sexual or emotional ownership over others, and neither do we expect them to cater to our emotions. We truly value friendship, which is still not very well understood in polyamory, even though they claim it's not all about the sex. I have yet to see consistently healthy polyamorous relationships depicted in any of the media that we turn to for the most guidance. And horrible films like Vicky Cristina Barcelona and even She Hate Me tend to feature all the destructive, romantic, and monogamous ideals that get played out in polyamory without ever once addressing the abusive dynamics that lead to such things. She Hate Me actually ends up with a happy poly-A triad, but the journey there is fraught with stereotypes about bisexuals and lesbians. And we only get a few minutes to actually see how this new triad interacts and get to guess at whether it actually remains healthy or not. There's been some broader media created about non-monogamy, but it still is completely whitewashed, heteronormative, or extremely non-intersectional. Let's change that already. I've already started doing it. I've been doing it since, you know, for over 20 years now. People aren't exactly looking at it yet, but maybe folks are finally ready to. We'll see. Since I was about 12 years old, I have been writing stories about various forms of non-monogamy that are all across the sexual, mental, health, traumatic, and racial spectrums and beyond. We need so many more of us to speak up, and we need all of you more normative people to make the room and leave the room for us to do so. So much of the conversation is still being dominated by mostly cis straight people, many of whom do not have children or chronic illnesses, and especially not chronic pain. And while I have been writing about these intersectional issues for most of my life, it's clear that many in the poly-A community are still not ready to listen. If it isn't talking about jealousy or compersion or dates, it tends to be considered too political or divisive to be brought up. After that incident with the open relationships group that I mentioned, there were many marginalized people who left because they did not feel heard. And yet, still, so often we hear all these questions of how can we get more of such and such people to visit our group or anything. It's a very common question, and it's bullshit because it's like you can't form the group and then invite the people who most need it or who should be there from the beginning. It has to be accessible to these people from the very foundation on up. We're not fucking afterthoughts. We're human beings. Speaking of which, most people just tend to think of us in statistics. So here's the reality behind the statistic. Most people within the polyamorous communities may only be familiar with other marginalized people via statistics rather than actually fucking listening to us or reading our work or whatever, or hell, even dating us. So people like me seem to only exist as shadows or impossibilities within the communities. Thought leaders like Franklin Vaux, Aggie Says, and Elizabeth Sheff can really only give information based on broad generalizations, and much of that is actively harmful and contributes to the erasure of the marginalized. We are often talked about as a monolith and not as individuals. LGBTQIA 2S plus people, survivors of abuse, and the neurodiverse are usually only mentioned in passing and as an afterthought. The information given is based on this cookie-cutter picture and is not the lived reality. There is also a shocking dearth of talk about anti-blackness and its interrelated oppressions. Only recently does any big name in non-monogamy even care to address it. But, as I said before, we are not fucking afterthoughts. I am not a fucking afterthought. All this talk of turning jealousy into compersion, of failed and frankly rather abusive first relationships, or several first relationships, couple privilege, and of having the money to just travel and date at a whim, have nothing to do with the life that I have lived. I am still exoticized, fetishized, marginalized, and actively silenced, and even stolen from within the community. I found, actually, until I came across Kevin Patterson, I found no stories from people of color, queers, the disabled, the poor, the aromantic, or even survivors of abuse, except for, you know, when I discovered Louisa Leontiades' site. She did speak a lot about trauma and about parenthood and all of that, which is why we did, you know, we partnered for a while, did the partnership through Postmodern Woman. But the point is that it's still not enough, because the shift is not... The shift hasn't empowered the people who have been disempowered yet. So instead of claiming that all newbies and all non-monogamous people can use the most popular resources as guidebooks, let us label the information that's out there as exactly what it really is. Information for mostly white cishet people to open up their relationships when they either get bored or, you know, whatever. Creating and sharing books and other resources based on an intersectional analysis by those who aren't in positions of power will go a long way towards opening up the community's eyes to the damaging power dynamics that they've brought with them from the dominant cultures. So how about the so-called leaders step back and let us marginalized people create our own fucking content and speak for our damn selves? especially in entertainment. We need stories that reflect our own realities. We're more likely to feel alone and way more likely to commit suicide or to die from violence, especially intimate partner violence. That's fucked up. That's fucked up. Yes, dating and romance is fucking dangerous for us. It's fucking dangerous for us. So having our own possibility models can go a long way towards letting us actually see our options outside of whiteness and outside of a metanormativity. So, for example, the books in the Kuehl Effect Project, my writings on postmodern woman, on the site Queer Black Voices, the site Polyamory on Purpose, and even within Kevin Patterson's book, what is it, Love Beyond the Color Lines or something? I'm sorry. Sorry, Kevin. We'll make sure I get that title right in the future. Oh my goodness. Brain fog is a bitch. Anyway, these are good places to start if you actually want to get a feel for the lived experiences of intersectional and marginalized identities, emotional literacy, and healthy relationships for once instead of toxic or abusive ones. Most recently, I started writing Lilith's story, which is my way of restoring the queerest, blackest, freest, original human to a world sorely lacking. Black femme or AFAB love and passion has been so distorted towards consumption by white folks and black AMABs. We are perceived as ghetto, as hoes, as masturbatory tools, as sexless, as terrible parents, and more. It is beyond time that we reasserted our own agency in ways of loving and satisfying ourselves. And that is why Lilith is my fucking power creature. Lilith is my soul. And I will do justice to her story. We have so much in common after all. Anyway, speaking of Lilith and speaking of being a black person who gets read as a woman, drama-free polyamory excludes me. That's the next myth that I want to, you know, bust. So speaking of health and its options, I would be considered one of these drama-filled people that polyamorous folks most often try to avoid. Not because I actually cause drama, but because I encounter so much trouble and oppression by the nature of my marginalized identities. Being with me requires one to actually deal with the heavy issues every single day. So I'm not the fun type of polyamorous, and so I'm usually avoided. Yet in practice, drama-free polyamory ends up meaning that the new person doesn't come between the established couple. It means that they don't rock the boat. And it usually means that parents, disabled people, and people of other races are off limits. It has become an excuse for racism, sexism, metanormativity, and other isms to go completely unchecked. So instead of seeking drama, quote-unquote drama-free polyamory, how about we put emphasis on actually relating to people of all kinds, because we all live on this fucking planet and we're not going anywhere. So examine the ways in which your privilege allows you to ignore and further marginalize the experiences and lives of people who aren't as well off as you. And I want to ask you this: if non-monogamy is about freedom, why don't we work to make it possible for all of us to choose it freely without judgment? Let's all be game changers, as I like to say, instead of the person that needs the game changer. Because honestly, we're fucking tired of dealing with your shit. Okay? It's not so fun for us. And yes, this covers and includes people that you think owe you their loyalty, time, and love. It is not freedom if you own your lover's behavior. It's fucking abuse, okay? Do not require those of us who are black and AFAB and queer to behave, quote unquote, appropriately by your standards. We are not creating drama. We are trying to fucking survive in a world that has made a drama out of our lives. In order to address abusive power dynamics, I created quite a few presentations and courses that are available through the Metanoic Portal that are based on my research and my experiences and those of others. So I bet now you're going to point out, okay, but there's community support. We're a community. We're all about the fucking community, you know, especially intentional ones, right? Well, that may be true unless you're invisible. You see, those I've talked to who feel that they were born polyamorous or who are in other marginalized categories, especially Black folks and Indigenous folks, we often feel like we have nowhere to turn to for advice or information on our own experiences. The communities are still so largely dominated by tales of horrible first experiences, and no one is reading about healthier ways to actually go about it. Even the foremost resource, more than two, is so fucking couple-centric, a metanormative, and totally glosses over all marginalized experiences as if they're the same. Oh my gosh. And it's so weird too, because people often assume that the marginalized are all the same, but yet we are more different to each other than normative people are all across the board. So each of our stories is actually unique and needs to be heard and cannot be glossed over or blocked out. And if you're normative, you cannot say that you are an expert on things that marginalized people have been dealing with for generations. It doesn't work then. It doesn't. None of this works this way. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Anyway, so still, most polyamorous and non-monogamous events and housing are not very child friendly. Being impoverished, I cannot afford to leave my kid with a babysitter to go and fraternize with people who haven't even bothered to examine their default desires and so-called preferences. I also have had no one but my partner to turn to when two of my lovers died. I think most of my friends actually have with mental and physical health issues who've been made homeless and died and all kinds of other horrible shit. And their calls, they've all gone unheeded. I myself spent a few years recently homeless. And it was only those quote-unquote two political folks in intersectional non-monogamy that kept me afloat long enough to get to this fucking point. Go figure. And the thanks I got was a bunch of non-Black people, even to this day, still claiming to teach intersectional non-monogamy. And it makes no sense because it's, oh my gosh, like it's Black. It's Black. You cannot erase Black contributions and the Black focus of it. Like, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway. What about these other very real dangers that some of us face for practicing our non-monogamy? I mean, y'all say that being polyamorous is not, or even aromantic or asexual, people don't face depression. But excuse me, bisexuals, trans people, Black non-men, the neurodiverse, and those with disabilities like me are more likely to commit suicide, to be killed, and to be attacked, especially if people can also label us sluts. We cannot separate one of our oppressions from the other, because Blackness and these other factors will always make us bigger targets. Always. Because it was the Black free communities in which non-monogamy was very viciously stamped out. And it was white mainstream non-monogamy that became popularized. Okay. Just to get that straight. I have been raped, stalked, and molested because of ignorance and stigma around polyamory on top of everything else. When you are already marginalized, being polyamorous or otherwise non-monogamous becomes even more of an excuse for people that people use to treat you poorly. And if our partners are abusive, it's that much harder to leave because we have so few resources, and so much fewer resources than anyone else. So eventually the only way out, it looks a lot like death, either by our own hand or by another's. Polyamorous people say that it's not about the sex and that polyamorous people don't face discrimination. But that's just not true if you're not white and straight. Those of us most likely to face legal or dire situations are also those least likely to receive help. This is unconscionable. If non-monogamy is supposed to be more ethical, then we need real resources that deal with daily life for those of us who don't have it easy. Truly ethical behavior addresses sexism, heterosexism, metanormativity, ableism, classism, body terrorism, abuse, discrimination in housing and in religion, and so on. All the other isms, which, by the way, is also a term that I fucking non-men, intersectional non-monogamy, and isms are fucking and abuse culture and things like that are terms that I created, that I coined and did work around, and that nobody else was fucking talking about until I started to. Okay, credit where it's due. I don't know. You can always tip me. There is now a way to to provide some coin directly through the show if you would like to. So, take advantage of that. And hey, if you sign up to be a monthly, to give monthly, I will even throw in a free membership to the Metanoic portal for you. So how's that? Anyway, let's get back to ethical. Truly ethical non-monogamy will focus on emotional literacy, rationality, and intersectionality instead of fumbling through the dark or simply developing the most basic of emotional literacy. And all this to really say that abuse is not a personal problem. It's a fucking epidemic. So the more I read, the more I saw and understood that there was not much advice on what to do when somebody encounters abuse. There's this horrible encouragement to have empathy for the victim. But I can tell you, as a survivor, as a multiple survivor of rape, of emotional and physical abuse, and multiple suicide attempts, I don't need your fucking empathy. I need safety, first and foremost. And you know what? Neither I or those with similar stories have found much of either in the mainstream communities. There is this view of victims as somehow bringing the abuse on ourselves or being open to it in some way. My personal story is different. Obviously, as a child, I was literally unable to physically defend myself from violent and sexual attacks. And yet, I never thought any of it was my fault or my doing. I never felt guilty about what happened to me because I knew I deserved better. Fuck that shit. I am that odd combination of having chosen healthy relationships while simultaneously suffering horrific abuse from strangers and acquaintances. I didn't escape the suicide attempts arising from my disabilities and life circumstances, though. But, that was dealt with. It was, in many cases, it was a form of harm reduction, If I had one choice left, I was gonna make it so that no one else could hurt me, If nobody else was gonna fucking get up and do anything. Anyway, the point is, intimate partner and sexual abuse happens to nearly one in every three people. And it's even more likely to happen to bisexual, queer, trans, mentally and physically disabled Black non-men, and Indigenous people as well. One particularly abusive behavior, gaslighting, is actually more likely in polyamory, because unchecked abuse culture gets amplified instead of nullifying abuse among greater numbers of people. The higher likelihood of minorities encountering abuse and intimate partner violence being one in three tells me that this isn't a personal problem, it's a fucking epidemic. The communities focus on treating the symptoms instead of the deeper causes of these issues. There's more focus on the victim rather than the perpetrator and the circumstances that allowed the abuse to occur in the first place. Abuse was never a personal issue for me. It was a reflection of an embedded cultural disease. I also have a presentation and soon to be book and all that and a course on abuse culture. And it's a more nuanced and very involved topic. Obviously I'll mention it more as this podcast goes on, but for today we're just going to finish up this section. Anyway, the only way to eliminate abuse culture is to deal with the systems that support it and to understand and center survivors' experiences in our own voices, in our own words. That's why I write my stories from many different perspectives as well as my own. So, what does community really mean then? For decades, the thousands of voices in the Kuhlverse were the only ones to keep me company. For many, community is simply a place to relax and have fun. That's what friends are for, right? You know? But for those of us with intersectional identities, having a safer, understanding, and representative community can mean the difference between life and death. We should feel and be heard, cared for, and human. In so many ways, our humanity is the last facet that gets recognized in us. So let's truly create communities where humanity is the first thing to be emphasized. If the community really is about not accepting the norms and not defaulting, then let us truly embrace that and celebrate our fucking differences. What do you say to that? So, if you like what you're hearing and want to directly support me, there are now subscription options, monthly subscription options. So, sign up. And if you do, you might just find yourself with access to the Metanoic portal for free. Hey, that sounds pretty sweet to me. So, go ahead, try it out.